Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Kielbasa King Sports Extravaganza. Of course, brought to you by Bucky's Fifth Quarter, and I am Jake Okorowski. We are joined by the Polish Rifle Scott Wisniewski, recording on a Sunday night. Lots going on right now, a WWE pay-per-view. You have, of course, the NBA All-Star Game with Giannis already throwing down two monster dunks. And, of course, big news. Of course, we were going to plan on recording tonight, and news drops while I'm driving back from the Kenosha area on I-94. And by the way, I've never felt more like a running back being led by a fullback through a hole than when I was right behind a plow on I-94 heading westbound. But of course, as I'm driving back, news, Mike Moustakas reportedly agrees to a one-year deal. That's by Ken Rosenthal from The Athletic. And then Bob Nightingale, I think a couple others reported as well, that the deal is for $10 million. And Scotty, I mean, you were at the Arctic tailgate yesterday. You got your tickets for this season. But this is big news for the Brewers, bringing back a key piece of their run at the end of the year. And someone that's been there to a World Series and also been in the playoffs, he returns. And that's another glove in the infield.
Well, it gives you a couple of things, by the way, and I'm glad you were able to make it back through all that snow safely. But it's, first of all, just to clarify, it's 1 year, and then the second year is a mutual option at $10 million. But there's a lot of people saying, well, you know, again, Shaw's going to play some second, and they don't see why this was important. I think this is important because they didn't go grab, say, a Dozier or a Murphy or DJ LeMahieu, right? And the reason for that was they didn't want to commit to more than a year because they didn't know how Keston Hira was going to come up and play and whatever, right? I like this move for a couple reasons, though, because it allows you to do a few things. Number one, yes, you can put Moustakas at third every day and let Shaw play second. Or you can give Aguilar a break, because I think Aguilar struggled down the stretch last year a little bit because it was the first time he had played that much in any season, if you look at his career and you know, whatnot. So it allows you to let perhaps Moustakas play first or Shaw play first every once in a while to give Aguilar a break. It also allows you to not have to rely on Hernan Perez, because there are times where he might have to play short. What if Arcia gets injured? What if Arcia is struggling? What if you just want some lineup flexibility? Now you can feel good about playing Hernan there. And at second base, you know, I don't think Spangenberg was the answer there, but even if he plays there a little bit, he's also a guy who's going to play a lot as a fourth, maybe outfielder for this team. You know, Braun's not going to play more than 120 games. That's just the way it's been over the last, you know, half dozen years. So you're going to need somebody who can play there. So you've got Perez as an option there, Spangenberg, or even Thames. I know they went out and got Gamel. What it does is it gives you some flexibility, and it allows you to have some real battles for roster spots when you get into the spring training. So I like the move on that front. I still think there's one more move that I wish would be made, and it's another starting pitcher. Whether you bring in a smaller deal like Gio Gonzalez, because what that does is it allows you to have a lefty, which they do not have a lefty right now.
Right.
So there'd be that as an option. Or you go out and you bring in a guy like Dallas Keuchel, because what Keuchel does is Keuchel allows you to have a guy who's a top of the rotation guy. Here's the thing people have to understand, and he's a lefty. And obviously he'd be a better option at lefty than Gonzalez, who I like Gonzalez, but I think Keuchel's a guy. But you got to sign him for 3 years. You can't sign him for more than that. The guy's 31 years old. You got to be somewhat fiscally smart. But I think Keuchel helps his team, right? I think everybody would agree with that. Because what you have to look at is the first 54 games of the Milwaukee Brewers. The first 54 games, I'll run it down for you real quick, and you're going to see a dearth of teams, I'm sorry, a wealth of teams that were either in the postseason or have improved quite a bit and will be poised for a postseason run. And I'll run the schedule down for you. But what I'm saying to you is having a guy who's a more of an anchor for that rotation will allow them to not have to always, you know, 4 out of 5 games go deep into that bullpen, right? It allows you to give the bullpen a few days off, and you're going to need that because you certainly don't want to tax them and toast them in the first third of the season. But they start out with St. Louis at home. And St. Louis, you know, four-game series, I think they've gotten better by bringing in Goldschmidt, right? And they were a team that was on the cusp of the playoffs last year, right? Then you have a road series, so you're at home. Then you're on the road for the Reds. The Reds are a better team than they were last year. They've got three new starters, all legitimate starting pitchers, not, you know, roll-of-the-dice guys, plus Puig and Kemp, okay? So they're, and bringing back guys like Votto and Jeanette and Suarez, that's a pretty formidable team, okay? Then from there, you're home for the Cubs, and then you're back on the road. So the Cubs, don't sleep on them. It, with a healthy Chris Bryant, even though they didn't improve their roster by bringing in free agents, by having a healthy Chris Bryant and some of the underachieving ways they had last year, if those guys come back to the norm, they're going to be a formidable challenge. They just missed the postseason, game 163. They're going to be tough, right? Then they go on a six-game, seven-day road trip where they never leave Los Angeles. They got the Angels and then the Dodgers. We already know what the Dodgers did last year, right? Then they're home for their first extended homestand of the year. It's seven games. They've got the Cardinals again, who they just opened up with 3 weeks earlier, and then a four-game set with the Dodgers. Then they go to St. Louis. Then they go to the Mets, and we know the Mets spent a ton of money. Then they're home for the Rockies. The Rockies were a team the Brewers beat in the playoffs. Then the Mets come into town, and then the Nationals, who ended up adding to their rotation, a team that was already pretty solid. Then they've got their biggest road trip of the season thus far. They go to Chicago. Then they've got four in Philly. Philly probably making the most improvements of anybody by bringing in Segura, bringing in McCutchins, and now JT Realmuto. So they're going to be, you know, ready to go. And then three with Atlanta, a team that won their division last year. Then they come home for two with the Reds and three with the Phillies before the schedule starts to lighten up a little bit. That's a tough stretch, 54. And inside of those 54 games that I just mentioned to you, they have one, two, three, four, five, six off days, which is okay. I guess that's not a terrible stretch, but there's a lot of bouncing back and forth between home and road. A lot of travel. It's going to be a taxing schedule. And to be honest with you, they can come out of those first 54 games near 500. They're poised to do some great things. But it's just going to be tough. And I guess the most important thing they need to do is protect the bullpen through that stretch. And this, it's really just a long way of me saying I'd like to see them add something to this rotation.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fair. I mean, there's so much you can rely on young pitching, but it's something where if you want to compete, the NL Central is going to be tough. And it's just going to be, it's going to be a tough division. And it's probably the toughest in baseball. And you have,
well, and Jake, not only that, I mean to cut you off. You're right. And we're going to talk about that. Not only that, although I think the NL East is going to be meat grinder as well. But other than Miami and Pittsburgh and maybe San Francisco, because I still think San Diego is going to be sneaky and make a move here. It's hard to find a team in the National League that didn't improve. You know what I mean? Like, everybody in the National League did some things to get better, including the Brewers by bringing in Grandal and bringing in Moustakas. But every team has improved. So there's very few teams you look at in because I think Cincinnati is a sneaky team this year. I really do. So other than maybe Pittsburgh and Miami and maybe San Francisco, it's hard to look at any of these teams and go, oh, yeah, this should be an easy series for the Brewers or for any team in the National League. And then you compound that with the fact that the Brewers have two series with Houston this year because they play the AL West. Okay. It's not easy. It's not going to be easy. If they make it to the postseason this year, they will have earned it. Not that they didn't earn it last year, but they would have earned it because the Brewers aren't going to be able to sneak up on anybody this year. People are expecting the Brewers to contend. People aren't looking at the Brewers in other cities now in April and May and going, oh, yeah, that's an easy series. We got the Brewers coming in. So it's going to be fun. I hope that the Brewers stay competitive through this whole thing. I really do, because I think there could be some really, really cool nights all the way through the season, not just in August and September. Like I said, April and May is going to feel like a playoff atmosphere.
Yeah,
at Miller Park. I mean, I've never seen a home schedule this packed in the first 2 months with teams that are legit quality contenders.
I was going to say, when it comes to, let me ask you right now, based off of the rotation, what do you think the rotation, I mean, the pitchers and catchers report, I mean, Monday, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, is when they start the full team workouts. Yeah, but who do you feel will be, way too early prediction, but starting five rotation, top five pitchers that'll be in the rotation to start the year?
Well, you're right when you say way too early, but I guess if I were looking at right now, I can tell you what I know for sure. That's provided they don't add anything to the rotation and they don't have any injuries. I think you're going to have Chichin is going to be there. He's going to be one of the guys. I think beyond that, the other one you can probably guarantee if he's healthy is going to be Jimmy Nelson. Okay. Now, if it's me, Corbin Burns is a starter, and there's no question about it. I mean, he's your starter. So that leaves two other starting spots that will be kind of fought for over Peralta, Woodruff, and Chase Anderson, I believe. I think they're fighting for the last. I know Zach Davies you can throw in there too, but I think those three are fighting for the last two spots. So you'd have Nelson, you'd have Chichin, you'd have Burns, and then you'd have two of the three in Chase Anderson, Woodruff, or Peralta. Then after that, you know, a guy like Junior Guerra, I think you hold on to him and you have him pitch out of the bullpen. You need those spot starts as well. And then I don't know what you do with Zach Davies. If he's got options left. I mean, again, this is all contingent on the fact that he doesn't absolutely, you know, shine in spring training. He could have an amazing camp, and then you got to consider him. So again, nobody's thrown a pitch yet in a game that you can even judge. So I'm just giving you, as we sit here on February 17th, what I think the rotation looks like. That could all change. You know, there's going to be injuries. You know, there's going to be guys that kind of pop up out of nowhere. One of the guys that could pop up out of nowhere is Josh Tomlin.
Yep.
He's a non-Western invitee. He's had some good seasons with Cleveland. He had a bad season last year. But he could be this year's Wade Miley. You know, so you don't know. And then, of course, there could be a move made if it's Gio Gonzalez or if it's Dallas Keuchel or maybe nobody, you know. But, again, you just never know. And maybe this is the year Aaron Wilkerson does something and really makes you take notice and say, I got to keep him on this team, you know. It's going to be interesting. And I know spring training games don't count, and they don't. But what they do count for, what I do enjoy about spring training games, is I enjoy watching to see pitchers figure it out or see pitchers kind of surprise you like Wade Miley did last year, right? So it'll be interesting to see. There's a lot of battles. And there's battles in the bullpen too. Matt Albers, does he stick around? Do they try to deal him? You know, Jacob Barnes, Alex Claudio is the new face. They got him from Texas. And those guys go along with your Jeffress and your Haters and your Knievel. Like, those guys are good. And then you still have Williams, Taylor Williams, whether or not you're a fan of his, I'm not particularly, but he's a guy who logging. Jake Patrica was a guy they brought in that they're hoping he can get a bounce back. So you just never know. There's going to be some competition, but it's good. How many times as Brewer fans was there competition by attrition? Like, well, five of these guys are going to make the starting rotation. You know, we need six or seven guys in the pen. I don't know. It's going to be a hodgepodge of these bums, right? That's not the case this year. There's some real competition going on. And that goes for the roster spots too, because I was going through the roster in my head and trying to figure out who makes it now that Moustakas is, I think, the odd guy out, ends up being Tyler Salandino, which I'm fine with. But then I realized that they're really hoping to get a bounce back from Brett Lowry.
Yep.
Who's in as a non-roster invitee. So again, those are things that are going to be fun. I mean, they're going to be, you know, interesting thing to watch develop. And again, even though spring training games don't count, it's just nice to see different faces and see what some of these guys do. again, out of the non-roster invitees, Josh Tomlin's one of the ones I'm really looking at. The other two things I'm going to watch in spring training, they're not going to make the team out of camp, and it's by design, but I really want to see both Keston Hira and Corey Ray and see what they do in their at-bats that they will get in spring training, because those could be preludes to things of better things to come from both of those guys. So it'll be interesting to see their at-bats too. Again, they're not making a roster coming out of camp, but they could make this team at some point later in the year, and it'll be interesting to see how they handle major league pitching.
Absolutely. So, I don't know, anything else you wanted to cover with, I mean, I know there's reports out there about Bryce Harper getting closer to possibly becoming a Philadelphia Philly.
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing too. And doesn't that just make, so we talked about the Phillies and their improvements, and that wasn't even counting the potential of adding Bryce Harper. What a stacked team that's going to be. I mean, Segura is amazing as it is. And then, you know, you add in there Bryce Harper and JT Realmuto with Rhys Hoskins, with Cesar Hernandez at second base, with McCutchen. I forget who the other outfielder is right now off the top of my head who's really, really good. That's a good team, man. Like, that's going to be a hard team to beat. And then you take Aaron Nola at the top of that rotation, and you're off and running, man. I mean, that is going to be tough.
Yeah.
So
confirming on this too, Bob Nightingale has said, like, this is appears to have found the team in the Phillies. There's signs are pointing to the Phillies. And then John Heyman saying Harper has multiple long-term, or John Heyman is mentioning that Harper has multiple long-term offers for more than $30 million. Even though Philly, he reports, is viewed as a favorite. So, I mean, that's interesting too, having multiple 30-plus year contracts. And then you're going to have Manny Machado at some point sign with.
Yeah, and I'm interested to see what Machado's, because I honestly have thought that it was going to be the Phillies. I honestly thought it was going to be the Phillies for Harper all along, right? So what I didn't know is what to expect from Machado. But I didn't want to put the cart in front of the horse. So when I've been telling people what I think of the Phillies and how good they're going to be, I did that with in my head, feeling that Harper was going to be part of that team, but also making sure to not speak too soon, right? But that team just becomes amazing. And I forget that Jake Arrieta is the number two starter there, and I remembered when I was looking for outfielder Herrera. Obedel Herrera is the other guy there. What a great outfield that with him, McCutchens, and Harper. Gee whiz. I mean, I don't know how you compete with that. I really don't. You know, obviously pitching wise, you know, they're after the top two. You got guys like Eichhoff and Eflin and some other guys. It's not like it's a murderer's row, but they do have that ace in Nola and a solid number two. And man, oh man, a lineup that's going to be really hard. There's going to be a lot of tough outs as you try to get, you know, the Philadelphia Phillies out. And remember, this is a team that had a little bit of a collapse because they were so young last year, but they were in first place, back and forth with the Braves for quite some time during the season until they kind of fell off at the end. They've gone and fortified that team. I mean, It's going to be something. It's going to be something to watch, and it's going to be tough to kind of work your way through that lineup. So, and as far as Machado goes, you know, I've heard San Diego, I've heard Chicago White Sox. If you would have told me anytime towards the end of the season last year that either the White Sox or the Padres were going to be in the running for Machado, I would have thought that I'd open a Twilight Zone. But those are still the teams I'm hearing as it relates to Machado. But definitely not teams you're used to hearing that kind of talk from, you know?
Right. No, it's the way, I mean, I think the way John Heyman viewed it with talking about the Bryce Harper current conversations, you know, he said it's an evolving market for Harper. I mean, that's how I felt like. I mean, I know there's talks about collusion with baseball owners and someone had a report. I saw a tweet out there talking about Mark Reynolds discussing his ordeal where, for the past couple of weeks, and you know, just saying like he was playing golf, and long story short, within the past week he got four deals for minor league offers, you know? Oh, sorry. That was a sneeze. But no. And so I find that interesting. I know Justin Verlander's let himself know, his opinions know about teams and quote unquote rebuilding and whatnot too. But I'm really wondering what's going to happen when the next collective bargaining agreement with baseball and the owners and the players step up and what really comes from it.
There's going to be a strike. I think there is. But here's the thing. I don't call it collusion. Here's the problem. Major League Baseball owners have been burnt in the past by signing guys to 7-year deals, 9-year deals, 10-year deals. Okay. I think Harper and Machado are both signed by now if they were willing to take a 4-year deal. Because they would have gotten their money, their per year money, if they would have taken a 4-year deal. But owners, I mean, here's the thing about baseball that you don't have to deal with in football. Okay. Every dollar is guaranteed in baseball. Every single dollar is guaranteed to a player unless he retires.
Right.
That's a lot to put on a 10-year deal for a guy. Now, yes, Bryce Harper's younger, but some of these other players, you know, Dallas Keuchel's 31. He started this saying he wanted a 6-year deal. Who wants to pay a 37-year-old pitcher what he would want per year? You see what I mean? Like, there are things in there that are making owners go, even big market owners go, boy, I just can't spend that kind of money. Now, what's likely to happen once they resolve the next labor dispute is maybe the luxury tax goes away because they view it as some sort of a pseudo cap, which would kind of hurt small market teams again. And we'll see if that happens or not. But either way, I think that owners are willing to give money out, but in shorter contracts. And it's making you have to keep earning, keep proving yourself. Hey, look, I know it's easy for me to say because I don't understand what that kind of money even looks like. But I'd be willing to bet on myself, right? Like every 4 years, right, if I had to. Like if I'm Bryce Harper and I know that I have that kind of talent, I'm willing to take that chance every 4 years. Some of the other things they might do in the next labor contract is maybe arbitration. Maybe you get eligible for arbitration earlier. Maybe arbitration deals are two years in length. And there's other things they might have to do so that players still can earn. But owners still have to protect themselves. You have to protect your team. Again, Bryce Harper, say he signs a 10-year deal. Let's say 4 years in, he starts having nagging injuries and he never lives up to that potential. From years 5 through 10, he becomes an average player at best that's getting paid $25 million a year. How smart? Yeah. $30 million a year is what I'm hearing. Like, how smart is that from an ownership standpoint, even if you have money to burn?
Yeah. I know what that money is all. Again, I find it just interesting.
And Verlander, who can sit there and say, oh, yeah, teams are trying to tank. Really? Show me the we went through the National League and how all the teams got better. Who's tanking there? Other than Miami. Yes. Other than Miami. Who the hell is tanking? Like, some players, you know, some are more level-headed than others. But tell me what teams are tanking, at least in the National League. Show me. Because I don't right. see that. I don't see any team tanking except the Marlins, and they've been tanking for a decade or more. So that's nothing.
I mean, I guess I'm just waiting to see how it all plays out coming up in the next couple of years and what comes of it. But yeah, you know, for now it's going to be competitive in the National League at the least, and I'm excited to see how it goes. And I'm excited. We're not the first set of games come up later this week, and you know, we'll be off and running where people are going to be wanting to obviously take in Miller Park and down the road and with the opening days ahead and into the season. So I'm full speed ahead there. Another Milwaukee team that's making waves and the best record in the NBA, got the Milwaukee Bucks. And currently right now, Giannis and Chris Middleton airing it out in the NBA All-Star game with coach Mike Budenholzer also serving as a coach of Team Giannis, if I'm not mistaken. On that, I mean, we haven't had a chance to talk. I got to try to get Eric Name back on the show one of these days. But really just a fun year so far. They are two losses ahead of Toronto for the best spot in the Eastern Conference. So they're two games ahead in that loss column there. And just thoughts on this, really this first half in your opinion. I mean, this is, it's an incredible team. It's something that, I don't know, maybe it's back to in the 80s where you saw like kind of the teams Don Nelson had, where just the, you know, the solid team. I mean, granted, there was that 2001 team. Let me just make sure I tell everybody that. Yeah. We all know about that team, and you and I have our talks about what happened during that series against Philadelphia in the Eastern Conference Championships. God rest Steve Haywood for, you know, in his thoughts as well. Mm-hmm. But I mean, this is it's been fun to watch. And my wife, you know, she's kind of like, we're watching the Bucks game. I go, yeah. And the boy, you know, our sons are starting to get more involved in with it. I know there's interest here in Madison, talking to some of my friends and their sons. We're all going to try to go to a game to catch this team live at some point after the Pfizer. I mean, the new arena with Pfizer Forum being really well. I've been there to cover that Marquette Wisconsin game, and it's gorgeous. I haven't had a chance to even look through all of it yet, but it looks phenomenal. So, I mean, if there's only one jersey I'd buy, it might be that, it might be the city look that they have. I really like how they're, I don't know if it's the city one or it's the white jersey. Yeah. That looks like the Mecca, like the old Bucks jersey. It looks phenomenal. And so, I mean, they have everything going for them, right? And they pick up a big piece at the trade deadline with Mirotić. I think this team, you know, he'll be coming back after his calf injury. I think they're in the right. I mean, I know the teams in the East got better. The top teams, I should say, in the East got better, really. But I think they're still in prime position if they can hold on.
Yeah, I don't remember if we did a show around the trade deadline or not, or if I was just talking to someone else. I still am curious to see what happens in Philadelphia now that they went out and got Tobias Harris, because it could go one of two ways, and they're both extreme. It's either going to blow it up, because now they got four legits, like a big four-ish, right? Or it could be destructive, because everybody wants the ball. Everybody wants to take their shots. Everybody wants to. So it'll be interesting to see, from that standpoint, how that plays out. Because if they can find a way to gel, and they can find a way to click and make some things happen, they're scary. Toronto hasn't been healthy much of the season, so if they should be able to continue to keep pace with the Bucks. And in Boston, at some point, you think they're going to figure it out, right? While the West is still the better conference, the top four, maybe top five, if you want to throw Indiana in there in the East, that's no joke either. Once you get through round one of the playoffs, the second and third rounds in the East are going to be pretty fun to watch, I think, right? The Bucks, you know, I guess the thing you worry about with the Bucks that you don't worry about with Toronto or Boston is playoff experience, right? Haven't won a playoff series. Right. Yeah, most of those players haven't won a playoff series. Ersan maybe has, but I mean, of their starters, they don't have a lot of playoff chops. And I think that still matters in the NBA. I mean, I don't think it matters as much maybe in the NFL. I don't know if it matters as much in Major League Baseball, but in the NBA and the NHL, playoff experience matters. So I think that's the one concern I have if I'm a objective observer of all this, is I'm curious to see if they win that first series, you know, and they do it and they show a little bit of moxie and poise. I think you kind of shake some of that off as you get deeper, but I think that's probably my only concern I have right now with the Bucks. I think they deepen their bench with the trade they made to add some depth at center. And as long as, again, and I got to preface this as well, as long as they stay healthy, because you get a key injury to a Bledsoe or a Brogdon. I mean, obviously, if you get a key injury to Giannis, it's over, right? But you get a key injury to one of those other guys, yeah, that'll be interesting, right? So if they can stay healthy and they can, you know, win a playoff series right out of the gate, I like their chances to get through the East, but it's going to be fun. It's really going to be something to watch.
Absolutely. So no, it's been fun watching them. I mean, and it's fun hearing, you know, Jim Paschke and, you know, and others on the call. Yeah. Yeah. Marcus Johnson. Yeah. And did you see of Johnson doing a dunk? I don't know if you saw it on Twitter. He did a dunk at 63 years old. So that was a fun little thing on
you
that know, end.
There's two things. You mentioned Steve Haywood earlier. And two things I'm really sad that he didn't get a chance to see was, one, the opening of the Pfizer Forum and Marcus Johnson finally getting his number retired. Because if there was anybody who was, you know, driving that charge and banging that drum for years, it was Steve Haywood. 15 years I've known him, and he was telling me that Marcus Johnson's number should be hanging from the rafters. And it's finally happening. And man, I wish he was around to see that, because that was a cause he'd been championing for quite some time. So, but it's finally happening. I think against Cleveland coming up, Marcus Johnson. Now, I was just at Fiserv today because we had a family outing. We went to Disney on Ice. And I'm looking at all those banners and I'm shaking my head that Marcus Johnson's number wasn't up there sooner. I mean, no disrespect, okay? Because some deserve to be up there. You know, you can't question Oscar Robertson or Sidney Moncrief. You can't question Kareem. That all makes sense, okay? But Brian Winters, Bobby Dandridge, okay. The fact that Marcus's wasn't there sooner is just silly. What was the other one? Bob Lanier. Bob Lanier was at the end of his career with the Bucks. He played five seasons with the Bucks, but he was at the end of his career and he was fine. But he certainly didn't put up numbers that make you go, oh yeah, he's got to be hanging from the rafters. You know, he was fine, but he wasn't Marcus Johnson, for crying out loud. What? I just can't believe it took this long.
No, I agree. I agree on that. I'm wondering too. This is kind of a thought. Ray Allen. Now I know they shares a number with Giannis, but I wonder what they'd ever do with him, where it'd be like one of those things where you've seen it before, where they'll retire a team, or like I think it was a football program, or it was a college program, where they retire the jersey of it. Like, so it'd be Ray Allen's 34 jersey, but they still keep 34 in production for a while. You know what I mean? I wonder if they'd ever do that for Ray Allen.
I would like that. And then I would like to see two 34s hanging from the banner once Giannis finally retires, you know.
That'd be fantastic. Yeah. And deserved.
Yeah. Cause Ray Allen.
Now what about Big Dog? What about Big Dog? What about Glenn Robinson?
I'll answer that in a second, but let me just tell you this about Ray Allen. He never wanted to leave here. So anybody who goes, well, he left Milwaukee, and not by choice. So let's understand that. Like, he wanted to stay here and be in Milwaukee. He made Milwaukee his home. He was very involved in a community here and did not want to be anywhere else. But George Karl had other ideas. So anyway. Yeah, you know, Big Dog's interesting. Let me pull up his stats here just so I have good perspective. Because everybody who knows me during that era knows that I was a big Glenn Robinson fan. Okay, I was excited when they won the draft lottery. I celebrated with my brother because I wanted Big Dog. I knew that Jason Kidd and Grant Hill were coming out. I wanted Big Dog. So, that was my thing. Like, I really wanted that to happen, and it did. And for some reason, this is how interesting this website is. I pull up Glenn Robinson, and it immediately gives me Glenn Robinson the third. Here we go. All right, here we go. So Robinson, for his career, averaged 20 points, 6 rebounds. But some of the things he did in Milwaukee, I mean, his first couple of years, his rookie season, when he absolutely, for whatever reason, the media or whoever does the voting on rookie of the year purposely gave the middle finger to Robinson by having a tie between Kidd and Grant Hill. Okay. But in Robinson's first season, he averaged 22 points a game, 6 rebounds, 2 assists, shot 48% from the floor, and there wasn't a three-way tie for rookie of the year. There was a two-way tie, whatever it was. 22 points, one, then 20.2, 21-1, 23-4, 18-4, 21, 22, yeah, sure, 20.7, So in his 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 8 years here, yeah, I could make you could make a case that his numbers should be retired. Yeah. I mean, his numbers are better than Junior Bridgman's. They're better than Brian Winters. 100% yes. I would consider him having his number 13 retired and hanging in the rafters as well. So I think you could make a case for the following four players. Marcus Johnson, that's happening. Ray Allen, Glenn Robinson, and then Giannis, no doubt, is going to have his number hanging there at one time. So I can't think of any other Bucks. I mean, some people have said to me, what about Michael Redd? I'm good. I mean, Michael Redd's teams, and again, this isn't really the way to always judge it, but his teams weren't very good when he was the leader of those teams. I know he played on the big three, but he wasn't that. Those weren't his teams. When they became his teams in Milwaukee, the Bucks weren't real good. So, I mean, all those other guys who have their numbers retired, they played on some really good teams. Even Brian Winters, those Don Nelson teams, him and Bridgman played on some really good teams. Michael Redd's teams, though, not so good.
Yeah, no, I agree with you there. Maybe they do something like the WWE Hall of Fame does, where they retire the four horsemen. Just retire the big three of Cassell, Robinson, and Allen all together, along with their separate, you know, along with Robinson and Allen's jerseys or something like that. But I was gonna say before we get going for the night, have you had a chance to look at the AAF yet, the Alliance of American Football?
I have not. I actually found myself poking around their website early in the week after their first slate of games, just to kind of get an idea of who's on some of the rosters and how many of the names. It's ironic that I recognize more kickers than I did position players at first. And I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, I think I remember that guy now. And obviously there's a couple Badgers on there, but I haven't watched it yet. And this weekend was really just a busy weekend between stuff I had going on at Miller Park, and then I had a wrestling show I was working yesterday, and then family day. Like, I have not just gotten a chance to sit down and watch any of the games. I think it is interesting, though, that the NFL Network is showing some of those games. I mean, don't you think?
I just think it's weird. They're not billing themselves as maybe as the XFL is, where they're not competing against it. They know the talent's not there, right? So, you know, the talent, you know, you're not going to have an Aaron Rodgers play for the Orlando Apollos or the, you know, Salt Lake City Stallions, which is my adopted team, by the way. And they're 0-2, so you can tell, you know. It's with Dennis Erickson, the former Miami head coach, and obviously whatnot. He actually was an assistant at Utah for a while too. Anyways, this team, you know, it's the offensive quality isn't. I think I didn't get a chance to watch today, but you know, yesterday it was. I mean, it's Birmingham Iron, which has a bunch of Alabama and Auburn players. And which I enjoyed watching. So it's kind of regional. So they have, like, for Salt Lake City, they have some Utah players. You'll have different teams like that, like Florida, or, you know, for the Orlando Apollos, which is coached by Steve Spurrier. So I think that gets me right there because he's just funny. He's a great offensive mind, and he's also a great on the mic and trolling fans. I know even at the end of the game, someone had tweeted a video talking about how he trolled Tennessee fans still. From his SEC roots, saying that, you know, the fans in Orlando sounded louder, or maybe it might have been Memphis. I don't know where they're at, but he said the fan base is louder than it was at Rocky Top, which is in for the Tennessee Vols. So stuff like that. Like the offense, I think the quarterbacks obviously aren't as good. And so sometimes the offensive quality isn't great, you know? And so maybe the running games appear more like Trent Richardson, the former third overall draft pick. He is running the ball more, and so he'll get a couple touchdowns. His yards per carry maybe aren't great at times, but you know, I think that it's going to get better. I mean, they have a better footing than what the XFL had back in the day. And I mean, even with the XFL too, though, Scotty, you have with the XFL, they just hired Bob Stoops to be the, you know, GM and head coach of their Dallas franchise. So these, you know, what they're doing is setting up. I mean, this is good for the game of football, in my opinion. where you have some interest. Now, let me just say the quality of football is what's going to suffer. I'm not saying that you're going to have – you're never going to have – the NFL is too big right now. The NFL is just way too big, and no one's ever going to overtake them unless something major happens. And it's not going to – unless something happens where you see something with the USFL where they start offering contracts that are the same and they get some funding that way. I don't think that's ever going to happen. That's just my opinion. What? I think the NFL is just too big. But I think it's a great alternative if they play it in the spring, or even, you know, like early or late spring, early summer, where they have an opportunity to show fans, you know, it's more, this game is, you know, the AAF is just great where they have this ability that, you know, they've implemented cool rules. There are no kickoffs and your onside attempt is a 4th and 12 from your own 28. And there's a sky judge that can overrule plays, you know, bad calls. And that's even a transparent process by itself where they talk and the fans see it. That's the interaction that, you know, I think that's really intriguing. I think that's the direction, especially with the kickoffs, I think down the road is where the NFL will go. So this is almost like a test thing. So back to your thought, the reason why I think it's going to be more like it could be like a feeder league, basically, where, you know, I'm not saying NFL Europe. I'm not saying NFL Europe, but it could be something similar to that.
I think the AAF could be, because what's going to happen now is you're going to have a diluted alternative. Good for the AAF for being the first. They're probably the only ones that are going to last. The XFL is going to fail again. And there's another one that the name escapes me now that a bunch of the ex-players are starting up, and that's going to start next year too. So there'll be three alternative football leagues that are competing for the same viewership during the same time. And that's where I think it's going to get diluted. And I think only one of those three is going to survive. I like that there's an alternative and there's a feeder league, and I've been saying they should have that for a long time. But and I think there's even a fourth one, Pacific Pro Football, I heard something about. So you could have four.
That's been, I think, started by that's started by Tom Brady's agent. And that's the one that was trying to get Trevor Lawrence to kind of forego his, like, college career at Clemson, the true freshman quarterback, to try to – I think they're trying to court him because they're going to do something – because the NFL has that rule where you have to play – you have to be 3 years outside of your last year of high school.
But you understand what's happening now. You're going to run into – a dilution of viewership and the product. So again, good on the AAF because they were the first ones. And then when I look at these three, not even counting Pacific Pro Football, when I look at these other three, there's a lot of them that are playing in similar cities. Even Birmingham's gonna have two pro football teams next year. And Birmingham is gonna fighting for the same dollar. Good, fine, whatever. Let them figure it. The NFL doesn't care one way or the other. If it does allow them to find themselves a feeder program, though, like the AAF, well, that's good because they've been looking for that for a while. But as far as the other stuff goes, I mean, the XFL, you know, the XFL, honestly, Vince McMahon and his people still honestly believe. I know Vince still believes that he could compete with the NFL, which is just ridiculous. Quit taking shots at the NFL. Just run your product out there. And that's where you failed last time. Because wrestling fans will watch it. But wrestling fans aren't always football fans. And they don't really know what they're looking at sometimes when they try to dabble into the world of football. I mean, let's be honest. We know wrestling fans. We're the rare exception, right? But there's a lot of wrestling fans that you wouldn't think are fans of any other pro sport. So they were waving the banners for the XFL last time, but they weren't enough to sustain it. So I don't know, we'll see. As far as the AAL, I will watch it. I'm not against it. I just, my time, like, so I get off of football. I'm a huge NFL guy, right? And I get through the Super Bowl and I decompress for about a month, and then I hardcore delve into baseball because baseball is my true love and passion. So in between there, and then the college basketball tournament, March Madness, I love that time of the year. Something has to be sacrificed. You know what I mean? Like, there are, so it's easy to sacrifice something that hasn't been part of my regular routine, and that's spring football. So you understand where I'm coming from. I mean, even from a time standpoint, it's not just about dollars, because I can't spend any money on the AAL anyway, because I don't have a team near me, but it's just a time investment. I mean, there's only so many hours that I have free to do other things, and it just hasn't made my radar yet. Right. So that's not a knock on them. It's just more of
right.
I'm kind of buying back some time for my family for how invested I am in the NFL on the weekends. I'm like, all right, yeah, let's go do a bunch of things, like go watch Disney on Ice, which if I didn't have a family around, you couldn't pay me to go watch that, right? But now that has to end up being at the forefront, because once baseball, the real games roll around in April, now my weekends get pretty involved in that as well.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think it's a I feel like both leagues missed a possible opportunity. I think there could have been something in Wisconsin. Now, granted, it's the weather compared to, yeah. I mean, that's why maybe they didn't have Chicago in there. I mean, they have Chicago, I think, for the XFL, if I'm not mistaken, right? And so, but, you know, no one from Wisconsin is going to root for a team from Chicago, you know, in terms of that. But, you know, even doing something, I mean, that's one thing I kind of want to do is reach out to Wisconsin and to say, were there ever discussion, like, and I'm talking about the Badgers, talking about UW. They had discussions with the XF or with the AAF or anybody in Wisconsin to see if they had just any, yeah, basically any discussions if a team either in Milwaukee or in Madison could have held the team. I don't know if Miller Park would be conducive to that. I think with the way the schedules are lined up, obviously it would interfere with football or with baseball potentially.
It would have had to be Madison. Because I don't know that the sight lines, the way the stadium's configured, it might have been tough.
Right.
But I think Madison would have been a great place for it. I just remembered the other league now. The Freedom Football League is the one that Ricky Williams and Terrell Owens and some other players are part of.
Yeah. So I mean, they got some things going on. So it'll be very interesting to see how it goes. But I mean, honestly, I've always felt like they could have called them, you know, the XFL would have been perfect. They would have had a team in Milwaukee, call them the Milwaukee Crushers after the Crusher from South Milwaukee. It sounds like a good football name. And then you take one blonde haired, all time winningest quarterback in Wisconsin history in Greenfield native, what played at Wynn High School, former walk on, turned team captain, Joel Stavi, back as quarterback. I don't think he's playing it. He's definitely, I don't know if he called it quits, but officially, but there you go. It could have been, you know, there you go. There's your little start there. And there's a little bit local interest as well. I can guarantee you there are a bunch of other, you know, Badgers too, that they could probably have gotten for the league, but I digress on that note. So,
you know what I think happens in 3 years, the AAF and the Freedom Football League end up merging and they continue to grow. But I don't think the XFL will merge with anyone, and that'll be their downfall because, again, that's Vince McMahon for you, right? So I do think that the other two leagues, once they start realizing they're fighting for the same dollar, will end up merging and continue to perhaps be that feeder league that the NFL has been looking for quite some time.
Yeah. No, I'm intrigued to see just what happens. I do like the designs. Like I was going to buy a Salt Lake City Stallions shirt just for the heck of it. And by the way, their jerseys are starter. Like, and they actually have on their websites, go Scotty, check it out. They have the old school starter pullover, you know, hoodie winter jackets for sale.
I had a couple of those. So who'd you have? What starter jacket?
I never did. My parents never got me one. Never.
I had three.
I'm jealous. I never had one.
Well, to be fair, I'm older than you. So when I owned mine, I was like college age. I bought them myself. Okay. But so because my parents wouldn't have bought me one either. So I'm with you there. I had a Philadelphia Eagles one, though, that was really sharp. So growing up, I rooted for three teams. Packers were my number one team. The Chiefs were my number two team because I, for some reason, I always liked them.
Thomas was huge.
Even before that. But because they were in the AFC, I figured I could root for them and not have to really have any conflicts unless they played in the Super Bowl.
Christian Okoye. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. And then for some reason, I just became an Eagles fan because that defense of theirs, first of all, I liked Randall Cunningham and that defense with Joyner and Reggie White. And my goodness. I mean, it
Jerome
was so
Brown. Good. Yep. All those guys. Yeah.
So those are my three teams. So I had a Philadelphia Eagles starter jacket, and then I had a Packers starter jacket. I had a Duke Blue Devils starter jacket, and a Wisconsin Badgers starter jacket. So I had four of them. I could mix and match. Well, not really. Well, yeah, because the Eagles had more black in it, and the Packers were more green. I had the blue, and then I had the red. So I had a starter jacket for every occasion, you see. I could accessorize and mix and match, and, you know. That and the fact that I owned about 200 baseball caps from just about every major football, baseball, basketball, college team, so I could mix and match my hats with my jackets. I was styling back in the day. You know, I had to look good in the early 90s. So anyway, that was that. But yes, and I think I probably wore the Eagles one more than anything because I liked the fact that it had black in it and I could just about wear it with anything. So
right. No, I mean, it's one of those things that, yeah, and I'm not bitter about it, but so I found that kind of cool. But all their gear is like sold out. So I tried to go online just to take a look and I could not find anything for that was so. I mean, I there's something there. I think there's a thirst, and I think it's like I said. I think the product obviously is definitely better than what the XFL was, but in terms of the on the field play, I do feel they need to get some more quarterbacks involved, and maybe that's something down the road where they, you know, it could be something where those quarterbacks that want to declare but don't necessarily want to play in college would want to go there. I mean, like I said, that's something down the road. But I digress. I think it's something that. It's promising and it'll be interesting to see, especially with those new rules.
I guess the other piece of that then to look at is I don't think the NFL in any way, shape or form is going to be threatened by any of these other leagues. However, you did kind of touch on something earlier when we talked about the Pacific Pro League. This could affect college football because it could give people an option to go there and still find a path to the NFL, especially if guys from these other leagues end up getting NFL contracts. You could have kids who maybe couldn't get into college or had some off-field issues or just didn't get what they wanted from a scholarship offer, bypass college altogether. Who knows, right? I mean, that's where college football in and of itself could be a little threatened, right? I mean.
Yeah, no, I feel that way too. Obviously, they have there are things to still work on. There's so many hypotheticals, but I mean, I like where it's. I like the direction it's going. I like the alternative. So, we'll see. Like I said, we'll see what takes time, and you know, they'll work through things. But promising start nonetheless, I think, for the league. But since we're running late, anything else you want to do, or should we take it on, brother?
No, I think that covers it. Now. We will start seeing more things come out in the NFL. Joe Flacco trade last week obviously can't be made official yet, but in about a month when free agency officially opens, actually less than a month now, it's going to be an interesting offseason in the NFL in general, but especially for the Green Bay Packers. So we'll be watching that. We'll be watching some of the battles in camp, and over the next week or so, you're going to see Keuchel, Harper and Machado finally signed somewhere. Where? We'll find out. We'll talk about that. And the Bucks as they make their push to the playoffs. And, hey, March Madness is right around the corner, man. Like, I mean, conference championships start in, what, like 3 weeks, 2.5 weeks if you're a small conference. So we're going to start seeing that. Right now it looks like both Wisconsin and Marquette are NCAA bound. How far will they get seeded? We'll find out. Well, Wisconsin's got some tough games on their schedule, but I just wish that offense. We could talk next time we do a show. We need to talk about them because I love the way they play defense. Their offense still sometimes scares me as far as going deep into the tournament just because, like we saw against Michigan State, they can just disappear for 7 minutes at a time. I'd like to see that get resolved, but both teams, I think, are NCAA bound. I don't, barring anything disastrous between now and the selection.
I agree. Yeah, we'll get into that next week for sure on that note. But other than that, brother, great show. Appreciate you making some time and us breaking it down, but we'll do this again next
week.
Sounds good,
man. I'm, like I said, I'm glad you got home safe. Winter can be over at any time. And by the way, I just want to give a big middle finger to all the people in December when we had our mild December say, it looks like we're not going to have a winter this year. You know where you can stick that.
On that note, for the Polish Rifle, Scott Wisniewski, this is Jay Kokorowski. Guys, have a great week. Stay safe on the roads. We'll talk to you guys next week on the Kielbasa King Sports Extravaganza.